In the year 1910, Nicholas II was on the throne of Russia, and George V became king of the United Kingdom. President Taft started the tradition of throwing out the first pitch on opening day of the baseball season. Father's Day was celebrated for the first time in 1910. Mother Teresa was born that year, and so was Olaf Larsen. And he is, so that's a long time ago. we're talking 100 years ago, and he's still going strong, and he's written a new book. He started writing it at the age of 98. It's called When Horses Pulled the Plow, Life of a Wisconsin Farm Boy from 1910 to 1929. And I've had a chance to read the book, and I was fascinated. It brought back actually some remembrances of my own, as my own days as a kid on the farm, because there were some similarities between what he talked about and what I experienced. Maybe you too. Maybe what you experienced as well. Fascinating book, and he's with us by phone today. He was born and raised on a tobacco farm in Edgerton, Wisconsin. Professor emeritus of rural sociology at Cornell University. And the author of When Horses Pulled the Plow, Life of a Wisconsin Farm Boy. He now lives in Florida. And Olaf Larsen, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Well, it's great to have you with us today. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you.
Jerry Apps is with us as well. Jerry is a storyteller, author of many books, including Campfires and Loon Calls, Horse-Drawn Days, Cranberry Red. He's been on this program a number of times to talk about his book, and he wrote the foreword to the book that Olaf Larsen has written. And Jerry, great to have you back.
And it's good to be here, Larry.
Oh, man. How'd you hook up with Olaf Larsen?
Well, it was Olaf doesn't know this, but I was one of those anonymous reviewers of his manuscript when it first came into the University of Wisconsin Press. And I was very impressed with the manuscript, and I was one of those who suggested that it be published.
Well, I'm glad you did. And I tell you what, Olaf, I'm going to bring this up right now. I got to the end of the book, and I was surprised to see that you have a bachelor's degree and a master's degree from the Department of Agricultural Journalism at the UW-Madison. And I've been a professor there for many, many years. And I went to the library this morning, and our department is now called Life Sciences Communication. I went to the LSC library, and I found the thesis that you wrote for your master's degree. It's bound and still in our library. It was presented by you to the department in 1932, and the title, you probably remember it, but it's 22 Centuries of Soil Cultural Practices.
Right.
So
still on file.
it's still there, and it's still on file. So it was a real treat for me to learn that you had that connection with our department. And How did you come to write this book? When you started, when you were 98?
Well, actually, this did not start out to be a book. It all started when I have two sons, and when they were in middle school, they would ask me questions about the farm, and sometimes they'd have the same stories over and over again. And then when they had children, my grandchildren, they also had a great interest, and this continued over the years. And so I thought, well, at some point, maybe I ought to put this down in writing for the family. And that's why when I had a break in and when I was in summer, I was 98, I decided to write down my experiences on the farm. And at that point, it was just intended for the family. And when my son in Orlando saw it, he said, "Dad, this ought to be published." And I had about a dozen people look at it, And they all sort of seem to agree that a great variety of people, different ages, backgrounds, and so on. And so I thought, well, if it's going to be published, it ought to be in Wisconsin. And I found out the University of Wisconsin Press had a Wisconsin Land and People series, and so I submitted it, and here we are.
And here we are. That's just a great story. And you settled, and your parents came to southern Wisconsin. How did each of them get here, and how did they meet?
Well, my father came from Norway, and he actually landed on a large farm near Edgerton in 1904, I believe it was. And then my mother was born in Rock County on a farm there, and my father was a hired man on this farm, and my mother was a hired girl on this same farm, and so that's where they met.
Oh, that's a great story. And Jerry, you say in the introduction to the book that while your generation or two younger than Olaf, many of his experiences resonate with your own experiences. What are some that really stood out?
Well, for instance, Olaf talks about farming with horses and all of the adventures in doing that. And I grew up with horses. We didn't get a tractor until after World War II. And likewise, on our home farm up in Washer County, west of Wild Rose, we didn't have electricity either until after the war, nor did we ever have indoor plumbing as long as I lived on the farm. So those sorts of commonalities we share. It's interesting as you think about the history of Wisconsin agriculture for many, many years. It remained quite similar for two or three generations before things really started to change after World War II.
Yeah, absolutely. You, Olaf, talked quite a bit about the ways that the community was structured around the land, the school, the town. I think a lot of that is quite similar to...
Exactly. The country school story. I attended the country school for 8 years as well.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about the ways that the community was structured around the land and the school and the town, Olaf.
Well, the country school that I went to was about 5 miles from the town, which was the trade center town. And the town at that time was just barely urban. It was just just past 2,500 in population. And so that's where, we went for most of our major services, groceries and blacksmiths and hardware and that type of thing. And we got there for years by horse and buggy, or horse and wagon, or horse and sleigh. We did not have an automobile, or my dad didn't, until 1926 when he had his first Model T.
So it was the horses took you everywhere.
Took us everywhere.
Yeah.
We didn't get anywhere nearby. And of course, if we went to once in a while, we'd visit relatives in Milwaukee. That was a train trip.
You talked quite a bit about the ways that rural children always had a lot of responsibilities, and often at a pretty early age, a lot younger than the city kids might have had chores. What kinds of chores and jobs did you have, and at what ages?
Well, when I was very, well, I probably, when I was five or six, I would take the chunks of wood that we use in the heating stove. I'd put those on the porch for my mother to pick up and put in the stove later. I would go to the well and get water because we had a windmill as a source of our water, and we always had to carry it in a pail into the house. And so those are the sorts of things around the house. And then I would help small things around the farm. But actually, when I was 12 years old, my dad said it was time to go to work in the summer. And so that was the end of my play days. and end of my barefoot days, actually. I couldn't drive a use a elevator with bare feet, so I had to wear shoes from that point on. So I did all the farm things from the time I was almost all of the time I was 12 years old.
Jerry, do those some of those jobs sound familiar to you?
Well, they do. There was a progression of chores when I was a kid, and that, not dissimilar from what Olaf was sharing. We started out carrying in wood. We heated our home with wood stoves as well. And then you in my dad, and I think most farm people were this way. He was a great psychologist. He had us believing that we would work our way up to these higher level chores, like pitching manure. That was a higher level chore. Can you imagine that? Thinking that that's something you ought to look forward to. But that's how he presented the whole idea to my brothers and me. So we started out with wood, then feeding the chickens. Then I suppose when I was 10 or so, 11, he said, now it's time to graduate to some of the barn chores. Well, now the pitching manure came along a little bit later, but carrying in straw for the cows, throwing down hay out of the hay mow, throwing silage down from the silo. And if you think about it today, when you're 12, 13 years old, as I think of my own grandkids, I can't imagine them doing this kind of stuff at their age. But that's the sort of thing that farm kids were doing and were expected to do. And we were doing it as soon as we were able, and sometimes a little bit before we were able.
And Olaf, one the story I remember from your book, you also had the task, and it sounded like a good one, of actually raising lambs that had been sort of rejected by their mother.
Yes, yeah, that's correct. Once in a while, a mother sheep, a ewe, would reject her lamb. And we always raised that on the bottle, and that was always my task. And I became very much attached to, to the lamb that I would raise. Every two or three years, there'd be one that I would raise on the bottle like that, become attached to.
And the cool thing about that was I think you also got to keep the profits.
That's right. When it was sold, right, that was a source of income for me.
And as he writes in his book, that source of income went into the bank and wound up as part of his college tuition and college living expenses for his time there. Olaf Larsen, one of our guests today, the author of When Horses Pulled the Plow, and also with us Jerry Apps, who wrote a foreword to the book. They'll be with us right up until 12:30 on the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along. As we take a look back in time at agriculture here in Wisconsin, actually as it happened in the area of Edgerton, Wisconsin, Olaf Larsen, at the age of 98, decided he needed to write a book about his time there. And the book's called When Horses Pulled the Plow, Life of a Wisconsin Farm Boy from 1910 to 1929. And he's one of our guests today. The other, Jerry Apps. Jerry has a longtime author, has written a number of books relating to agriculture, and he wrote the foreword to Olaf's book. You may have some questions. You may have some experiences to share about your time growing up or what your grandparents had to say, and I hope you'll join in. 1-800-642-1234. Back after the news. So happy to have you listening in on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Two guests for you today. Olaf Larsen, 100 years old. At 98, he started writing When Horses Pulled the Plow, Life of a Wisconsin Farm Boy from 1910 to 1929. It's a fascinating book about what life was like on the farm in Wisconsin back in those days. Jerry Apps has written a lot about the history of Wisconsin farming as well, and he is our other guest. He wrote the foreword to the book that Olaf Larsen wrote, When Horses Pulled the Plow. Olaf Larsen with us by phone, and Jerry with me in the studio. Questions or comments? Our lines are pretty full right now, but here's the number, 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org. We had caller Bill from Lancaster would like to hear your memories, Olaf, of the tobacco plants and the warehouses in Edgerton.
Well, they started building tobacco warehouses as soon as the production of tobacco got sufficient to justify that, and that started actually in by 1860. They were starting to grow tobacco commercially, and over a period of time, they built these tobacco houses of warehouses of yellow brick that came from clay dug there in Edgerton, actually, and there is just row after row of these tobacco warehouses. So we used to store tobacco, which had been brought in by farmers and kept until it was used for various purposes. But a lot of those tobacco warehouses are still there. They were owned by large tobacco manufacturers located outside of Edgerton and large other places.
As well, I think that's right. And there still are some of them. They're not all there anymore, but there still are many of those, some of those at least, those warehouses still there.
Yeah, and some of them have been converted into stores and things like that, I understand.
Yeah, absolutely. Peter in Black River Falls has a question or comment. Hi, Peter.
Thanks for taking my call. This is a very exciting subject. I wanted to start by saying that that Mr. Apps and Mr. Larson's experiences mirror my father's, who's still alive. He's 92 and remembers very well farming with horses, a team of Mustangs that his family got on a homestead in Montana before returning to Wisconsin. And my father also remembers getting electricity and telephone during the 30s. And I wish that the two guests would comment on the role of cooperatives in improving the quality of life in rural Wisconsin and magnificently improving the productivity of agriculture in Wisconsin. And lastly, to say that if you like Mr. Larson's book, you'll love The Land Remembers by Ben Logan. And I'm going to hang up and listen on the radio.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Olaf, you want to start out and talk a little bit about the cooperative movement? You certainly discuss it in your book, the cooperatives and their entry into Wisconsin agriculture.
The cooperative movement was pushed in the early 1920s by the U.S. Department of Agriculture in response to congressional legislation. And the hope was that farmer purchasing and marketing cooperatives, especially marketing, would greatly improve the income situation for farmers because they were in a depression following World War I. And in Wisconsin, the thing that I most remember is the push to organize a tobacco marketing cooperative, and around the mid-1920s, as I recall, and it was a controversial subject among farmers, actually. Some were very strongly supportive, others were not, but it did get organized, and it was an important way of marketing tobacco for a period of time. That is the one cooperative which stands out in my mind.
Mm-hmm. And there were others. Jerry,
yeah, Wisconsin became a leader in the country in having cooperatives, and that was especially so in the cheese making business. We had all over Wisconsin, and still do have a number of cheese making cooperatives, especially in Greene County, for example. There still are a number. Now, a cooperative, of course, is member owned and operated, and it does provide some stability for market, and it has we have a long and very interesting history on both the marketing and on the side of providing supplies and all of that sort of thing. And then I could add a couple of other things. Some of those of you listeners who know me know that I worked as a county extension agent for a number of years in Wisconsin. And one of my claims to fame, if there is such a thing, when I was working in Green Lake County, we organized a lamb pool, which is a kind of cooperative. And when I was working in Brown County, there, in conjunction with a number of Northeast hog producers, we organized a feeder pig cooperative with, under the leadership of Norval Dvorak, whom some of you will remember from the earlier days. So there are many different kinds of cooperatives in Wisconsin. Those are just to mention a few.
Yeah. And thanks for that call. Marion in New Berlin, we'll turn to you next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Thanks for providing a great trip on memory lane for us. I grew up on a farm in central Wisconsin, and I remember very vividly an activity that we did in fall with the corn harvesting time. We would have to snap the corn by hand out in the field, and it was usually late October, early November. It was cold. We'd hear the geese flying overhead, see them, hear them honking as they headed south. Our hands got really raw between the thumb and forefinger from snapping the corn. Then we'd move it into the barn, put it on the hayloft floor, and after milking and supper and so forth, we'd go out and by lantern light would sit and husk the corn. We'd throw the husks around ourselves to help keep warm and so forth. And I was thinking, I can't remember which of your guests mentioned the grandchildren probably not doing that. I couldn't imagine my grandchildren doing it today. But it was quite a trip.
Oh, man. Did you ever have to do that, Jerry?
Here's what we had to do. When I came home in the afternoon in the fall in the country school, we'd hitch up the team and take the wagon, steel-wheeled wagon, out to the cornfield. And those of you who are older will remember the banging board on the old corn wagons, where you'd snap off the corn just as this listener has suggested, and toss them into the wagon. Now the reason we were doing it was not to later husk it, but we had this is during the war, World War II. We had about 100 hogs. And so all of that corn we then unloaded in the hog pen. I did it every night for a long time. One of our neighbors, by the way, all winter long, they sat on the barn floor, freezing to death, husking corn. I mean, that's what we thought when we looked in on what they were doing.
Oh, boy. And Olaf, did you do that? I don't remember.
Well, actually, we also husk corn in the field. Going with a bang board and throwing the corn into the wagon, and that was the corn which we used to feed the hogs at that time of the year. But most of our corn was husked out of the shock. The corn was cut, with a corn binder put in shocks, and then later we went shock by shock, put the bundles on a little rack, and we husked the corn, and that was the corn that went into the crib to be used during the winter.
Yep, there you go.
Of course, I would add, we had a mechanical corn husker, corn shredder, we called it, that made the rounds of the neighbors just as the thrashing machine did, and that mechanical corn husker took off most of the husk, and then that's the corn that ended up in the corn cribs.
Darlene in Oconomowoc. On to you. Hi, Darlene.
Yes, I grew up on a farm. I started out in Whitewater, Wisconsin, and that was a blackland farm, which my father had to plow. My mother's maiden name was Peterson, which was Norwegian, and on dad's side it was Zimmerman. And my mother was born in the Grange, and her mother was a midwife. She was the only girl in five boys, and the last two were a girl and boy twin. And she was born 1909, July 9th, and her twin brother was 5 pounds, and she was 2 pounds. And she was put in a little box on the oven door, and there's something was going around at that time, and he only lived 3 months, and she wasn't supposed to live. Well, she lived until 101 and 5 months and passed away December 20th, last Christmas.
Oh.
And dad had passed away when he was 82. He ended up with Alzheimer's. Then we moved when I was 7 years old from Whitewater to Palmyra to the Kettle Moraine dump, where you had stones to pick up. I think you grew them. And you had stones to pick up all the time. Yeah. We did have horses for about the 32 years. And, we would pull the stone boat with the horses. And I remember taking the horses up. We had a field and that. There was blacktop, and I was barefoot, and I would stub my toe. And then we had a little field by the house, and we let the horses in. Well, one was real fast, and take the bridle off. Dolly walked right over me, and they were scared to death, but she walked over me. I never had a thing. Then that was all picking up stones. Wow, you cannot believe they grew more stones than that.
You know, stones. I remember, Jerry, I've got to go back. You had somewhat of a similar situation, didn't you?
We had a stony farm like you can't believe. My dad always said, if nothing else grows on this sandy farm, we can expect a good crop of stones every year. Oh, I have a lot of stone boat stories. They were a lot easier to pick with horses than with the tractor, by the way. The tractor, you had to get on and off the darn thing all the time. With the team, you could just stay right on the ground. And we picked tons of rocks. And people today, they marvel at how beautiful these stones are, and they pay good money for them. We'd have given them all they wanted, free.
Oh, man. Olaf, you did a little of that?
Well, we had our stones were mostly in the gravel pit, but every once in a while, a big stone from the glacier age would work itself up to the surface, and you'd run into that with your plowshare, and then we would spot that stone, and then we would dig it out and put it on a stone boat and get rid of it.
Darlene, thank you so much. I want to give some others a chance to get in here. Norm in Richfield, let's turn to you. Hi, Norm.
Hi, Larry. Thank you much for taking the call.
Sure.
Well, it's an interesting conversation you're having, because this weekend we're not going to just talk about it. We're going to demonstrate just about everything you're talking about. Out in Richfield, out near Holy Hill, north of Milwaukee and Menominee Falls, we're going to have our 13th annual Thrasheree.
Ah.
And the featured thing at the Thrasheree this year is draft horses. So we'll have draft horses actually doing demonstration of plowing and actually doing farm work. And since it's called a thrasheree, we'll have some old steam engines and thrashing machines. We'll have steam engines driving saws for cutting logs. Essentially, we move back 100 or 100-plus years in time and reenact it both Saturday and Sunday this weekend. We've got it's kind of a central feature of our historic park here in Richfield is a 1872 grist mill. And that mill and the home is on the same property will be open for tours. It really is a whole fascinating thing, whether you're interested in old cars or old farm machinery or just kind of celebrating the way things used to be. And, you know, we find that the kids really like it because they get a chance to understand something because you can see it, whether it's somebody demonstrating harness making or blacksmithing or what have you. So it's the same kind of thing that you guys are talking about this morning, and that's why I picked up the phone to say if people are interested, it's north of Holy Hill Road, about a quarter mile on Highway 164, both Saturday and Sunday, starting at 9 o'clock and running until 5. On Sunday, we're going to have a bunch of, well, not the original homesteaders, but the descendants of the original homesteaders of the area here.
Sounds like a lot of fun, Jerry.
In fact, I spoke there 2 or 3 years ago and saw all of that, and it is a wonderful event. It's just fabulous to see what they've been able to do over there.
Norm, thank you very much. Richfield, Wisconsin, this weekend. Thank you again for calling. And Doran in Elk Mound, on to you now. Thank you for calling.
Sure. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I really appreciate your guests and the stories they share. I couldn't help but call because I did not grow up on a farm, but
10 years ago, my wife and I and our six daughters, started milking cows. We have about 40 cows, and very much recreating this whole lifestyle that Olaf, enjoyed as a child. And I just see that the character has developed in our children. We've been doing it 10 years at the end of this month. And we became organic about 7 years ago. And we're mainly a grass farm. And we're part of a cooperative, as you were talking about, Wisconsin-based cooperative, Organic Valley, which has many farms that, are family-run. And a third of our membership is Mennonite, which still farm with horses. In fact, I'm on my way to a pasture walk right now at a farm by Curtis that, they farm with horses, and they're part of that cooperative. And, yeah, so it's been a great experience for us. As my wife says, we're not growing, we're growing children. That's what we're growing on our farm. And our kids are, up in the silo. They're up in the hay mow. They've picked a lot of rock. They move cows on grass. And now we have three in college, three of them, and they sure know how to work. And they know how to problem solve. And it's been a great experience. And it's been a hard life. As Thomas Jefferson said, farming is a hard life, but it's a good life.
Yeah. I think, Olaf, a comment from you on that? I remember you talking in your book, and I'm just about when you farmed. There wasn't a term organic farming, but that's what you did.
That's exactly right. Yeah, we used no pesticides, no herbicides, and in our case, no commercial fertilizers, and so everything is just naturally organic, even though you never heard of the term.
That's very true. And Jerry, I guess that there is a trend this way back again to that, isn't
there? There is. It's really, and the last caller was an example of that. There are a number of people around the Middle West and here in Wisconsin who are returning to the land in a new kind of way, and I find that just fascinating to see all of these different alternative approaches to farming.
We had someone also send an email in to say, talking about plowing. The roads weren't plowed in Plainfield back in the day, and there weren't trucks and snow plows as we know them today, so she and her siblings made their own path cross country to school, or when more navigable, rode horses and made a path. And the same went for roads until you could make a path with your horses and whatever wagons or cutters you had. You didn't go very far.
And when you went, you walked, or in the winter, we skied to school a lot when our road was closed, and that happened every so often.
Mm-hmm. And farmers, Olaf, in your discussion in your book, you said that the farmers themselves would often try and clear the roads.
Oh, that's right. When after a big snowstorm, and there would be some areas where there would be big drifts several feet deep occur, and to help open the road, it seemed to start with my father. He would put a walking plow on one side of the bobsled, and we'd plow as far as we could with that walking plow. Then we'd get these big drift areas, and at that point, neighbor men would join in, and they'd shovel out the drifts and until we got to our schoolhouse.
Yeah. Oh, boy, could you imagine that now? I don't think that would be happening right now. Oh, man. Well, she concluded by saying, many of us just don't know how lucky we are, and I feel the same for having my grandma's lifetime of wisdom and stories. And Olaf and the wisdom he has to share is very important, isn't it, Jerry?
It certainly is. I'm one of the things I do is teach life story writing, and I encourage everyone who has a story to get it down on paper and share it with your kids and your grandkids. If we don't, we're going to lose a lot of fascinating history.
You know, and I want to go back to you for a minute. Your website, jerryapps.com, is it?
Right.
Jerryapps.com has a lot of great information on it, but I know it also has some of your talks and so forth. You're going to be, in fact, we were talking with Bob Wilging earlier.
Yeah, we're going to be together in Cedarburg this weekend on Saturday and Sunday. I'm there, on Saturday from 1 to 4 and Sunday from 12 to 3.
Yeah, and then you're in Cumberland?
Well, I'm in Cumberland on the 21st at 5:30. I am working with the Walworth County Genealogical Society. They have a family history fair coming up on October 1. October 2, I'm Old World Wisconsin, talking about horse-drawn days. The 4th, I'm at the Union Grove Library talking about horse-drawn days. The 8th, at Stonefield Village in Cassville. That's October 8th. There I'm giving two talks on draft horses. They're doing demonstration work at Stonefield as well, demonstrating plowing and disking and dragging and that sort of thing with horses. October 15th at Wade House at Greenbush. I'm there at 1 o'clock talking about draft horses. And let's see, on the 18th of October in the New Holstein Library, there I'm talking about one of my novels, Cranberry Red, which is a history of cranberry growing. With some food safety issues thrown in.
And Jerry, again, I would invite you to go to his website, jerryapps.com, for more information on those presentations and about all the books that he has put together. And certainly Olaf Larson's book, it's published by the University of Wisconsin Press. I don't know that I mentioned that earlier. I may not have. But it's a great book. And I'm amazed at his memory.
And there's a great picture of Olaf and one of his lambs on the cover. I mean, it's just a wonderful picture.
You know, one of the things I should say is all the royalties go to the University of Wisconsin Foundation for a scholarship fund in the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences for Wisconsin rural youth.
Oh, that's wonderful. Olaf, thank you so much. I appreciate having you with us. And I hope we have a chance to talk again. Jerry, thank you so much.
Sure, you're welcome.
Olaf Larson is the author of When Horses Pulled the Plow. Thank you for listening. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.